December 6th, supposed to start at 2:15. We're running a little bit late, but hopefully we can catch up. So I guess for the last meeting of the day. So we can take as long as we want.
Yeah, we can.
First is called order. Second is approval of the minutes from the November 1st, 2021 meeting.
I'll move for approval, but I've got an amendment to make.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
With a motion and a second, we're in discussion. Mr. Chapman?
I'd like to amend the minutes to reflect on item 3A, bottom paragraph, that Ms. Corley, not Mr. Corley, second.
All right, we have a motion to amend the minutes. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All right, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Amendment passes. All those in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Approval of the minutes passes. Item number 3 on the agenda is public comment. If you are here for public comment, please come forward. You have 2 minutes. State your name and address for the record. Anyone? All right. Moving on to item 4 on the agenda, discussion of commercial design review standards to be maintained from repealing the Boulevard Overlay District.
Thank you, Ms. Whitley and committee members. It's nice to have the same group here so we can just keep moving on, continuity. And so this is, we talked about this at the last meeting, and it is advertised for public hearing to go to December Planning Commission meeting, but you had asked, and we wanted to bring it back to you prior to that just to get some input before the Planning Commission meeting. So we talked about some of those standards that we kind of all agreed on preliminarily, which is, you know, when we repeal the Boulevard Overlay District, there's a lot in there that we don't necessarily want to go away. And so what are the unintended consequences of rushing through and maybe not taking our time? And so what we've tried to do is put it together. Staff's been working really hard, particularly Michael and Peter with our design review board staff, and just trying to talk through and work through what is it that we think is valuable to carry over and put in other sections of our ordinance. I think we all kind of agreed that those 8-foot sidewalks in key locations, the activity zones, street trees instead of buffers. The Boulevard Overlay talks about street trees, obviously, to capitalize on those activity zones and those spaces for gathering. We wouldn't have kick and chicken if we were required to do buffers. So we want to carry over, if you front boulevards, those street trees instead of large buffers. Some things that we felt were valuable but wanted to get input from you all before we take it to the commission to consider were a few more things. One of them is right now in the Boulevard Overlay District, any type of development that includes any residential, you're required to have a minimum of 8% that is put towards open space or parks. This does not include the activity zone. It is in the form of active and passive parks, plazas, public gathering spaces. And so we felt like this was important. You know, when we have subdivisions, we do have in our Chapter 155, our land development regulations, we have a green space preservation plan. But that's for developments that are only 5 acres and larger. This 8% applies to everything within the Boulevard Overlay District. So we thought there may be some component of this that should be carried over in developments, perhaps that have to go through DRB, that involve some sort of mixed use or what have you. And is 8% appropriate? Should it be more? Should it be less? And I'm going to go through all these, and we can kind of go back and talk about them item by item. The second one is a building size limitation. This is currently in our overlay district ordinance. No limitations on square footage of structures will be imposed. However, because big box retail development is not consistent in our overlay, we have this limit to 50,000 square feet. We think this is very important. If you look at perhaps Moultrie Plaza or Northcutt Plaza, if you were to have redevelopment there and we don't have this, you know, you could end up with something the size of a Costco there, and that's just not going to be appropriate. So perhaps this is a ordinance provision that we want to carry over and put in our commercial design review standards. And this is specific to Coleman Boulevard Overlay District. So obviously it doesn't deal with, I don't think it applies to Johnny Dodds Boulevard, but this is something that we thought was important for y'all to weigh in on. Next, we have our access points to boulevards. The overlay requires them to look like a street, not a parking lot. You can see the difference. You have the crosswalk, the design and the landscaping and everything is different. And so we felt like this would be important to carry over into our design review standards when you're accessing off of one of our boulevard streets. Reduced curb cuts. The overlay district has shared vehicular access. We encourage that. Obviously, the benefit is more frontage and more developable land along the parcels. Next, we have our design review board for architectural. So if you have a, right now in the Boulevard Overlay District, a single family residence is not required to go through DRB. However, staff looks at it for architecture if you're fronting a boulevard. Duplexes, townhouses, multifamily, they all do go through design review board for architectural. So we thought, you know, it might be important to carry that over. So perhaps the language would be if you front a boulevard and you're residential or multifamily, you need to, at the very minimum, have staff level architectural review. If you're other than single family, perhaps you go to the DRB board. Last, we have terminal vistas. These are areas that are obviously tend to be a focal point, so you want to place more prominence on them. We felt like this might be a good one to carry over. So basically, you know, if there's an improvement on a property that is a terminal vista, you would go through DRB for extra architectural standards, just to make sure that it's appropriate because it is a focal point. And so these are a few of the line items as we went through the Boulevard Overlay District that we felt like we didn't want these to go away. We feel like they're valuable and important, but we wanted to get y'all's input. Perhaps they could be changed as they're carried over. And so I'll kind of go back. And I do have DRB staff. Michael's here. He has staffed DRB for a very long time and knows these ordinances in and out and the value of them and all the details. So we're happy to answer any questions you may have. And we can kind of start with the first one, open space, if you'd like.
All right. Committee, do you have any questions?
I like that. I love it.
Not on open space.
No.
But the only thing I have to say is, in the open space requirement, that no vehicle parking can be in there. And I'm speaking directly to an issue we continue to have where we've got car dealerships that are using the open space that are required for showcasing vehicles. We've got to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay. So, Ms. Reed, the question I have is, it seems like we're retaining a lot, you know, which, so I guess my question is what, does it make sense to do this way versus, I mean, I know we're moving towards repealing the Boulevard Overlay District, but what's left in there, I guess, is my question. That we're mm-hmm. trying to get rid of. Does that? Mr. Chapman, if you want to say?
I can speak to that.
Okay.
The question, the issue is having a defined zoning that is easily understood. Now you supposedly have the underlying zoning, but there's so much included extra in the overlay districts that it's hard for the developer and hard for staff to figure out what is available and what's not. And the idea is you want a defined zoning, which now is just the underlying zoning, which would be fine, but all the extra stuff that's included pretty much eliminates the underlying zoning.
Okay.
That's the issue to me.
Ms. Hyatt?
So I think what your question is, if we're keeping these things, what are we losing that we didn't want?
Does it have to do with density or?
Well, yeah, so there's density. So the expanded density is right now in the overlay, 12 units an acre. That would drop down to either 3, 6, or 9. But then it would be tied to the comp plan in those redevelopment centers. The height remains the same. The height is controlled by the height map. You'll recall there was a lot of time spent on Johnny Dodds Boulevard. We've got that adopted in the form of a height map. The big thing, obviously, what Mr. Chapman mentions is the expanded, there's flexibility with your expansion of uses. So, for instance, if you're neighborhood commercial and you're in the overlay district, you're able to do area-wide business uses. Same with office professional. You're able to do NC and AB uses. And so, that would go away. The extra density, the expansion of uses, and like Mr. Chapman said, you would be completely controlled by your underlying zoning.
And would all of these design review board provisions, they would only apply to the prior overlay district regions, or would they become newly adopted for all of the town?
I think some of them would just be specific to fronting a boulevard.
Okay.
For instance, the activity zone. We already, a lot of, and I think Michael said it in one of his presentations, a lot of what was later adopted in the Boulevard Overlay District has been absorbed into our commercial design review standards because we realize these are just good development standards and we want them throughout the town. But not everything is appropriate on Coleman Boulevard that would be appropriate on any other commercial district. And so I think some of these are very specific to fronting a boulevard. For instance, the activity zone, the access, those sorts of things. Open space and parks, that could perhaps be something that's expanded to other commercial improvements or mixed use improvements. But most of these are specific to a boulevard.
And just a logistical question, how is that defined in the design review standards? It'll be like previous boulevard overlay district, these apply to those parcels? Like how, if it's only applying to certain parcels in the town, how is it being mm-hmm. defined in the design review board considerations?
We would probably say if you're fronting Coleman Boulevard or if you're fronting a major boulevard or something. I don't think we have that language just yet, but okay. I think that's probably, we would just make it very specific to what boulevard you're fronting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ms. Hyatt?
So this would probably, this could include Chuck Dolly, Ben Sawyer, and Coleman?
Yeah, so it's, the boulevard overlay would be eliminated for all three. Mm-hmm. And then these design standards would be incorporated either across the board or specific to a boulevard, however the committee and council wishes. But for instance, I think it's the building size, that only applies, I think, to Coleman Boulevard right now. It's specific under the Coleman Boulevard Overlay District. I don't know that we would necessarily make that apply to the other boulevards at all. I think it would probably stay specific to Coleman Boulevard as it is now. But that's certainly an option as things to look at. Where do you want to make it applicable? Now's the time to do that through this process.
Well, I think that we could be in agreement that for open space parks, the 8% minimum should be applicable to all three, right? Coleman, Chuck yes. Dolly, and Ben Sawyer. Building size limitations, is that something that's only applicable to Coleman because Chuck Dolly and Ben Sawyer don't have the parcel sizes or the whatever to make that? They don't have sort of the big plazas?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the history of that or how it came about. That may be why. Michael, do you know?
Michael Robertson in the Planning Department. That was originally part of the way the Boulevard Overlay Districts came about. The Coleman Revitalization Plan was adopted first, and it was part of that. Mm-hmm. When Johnny Dodds was added, and then subsequently Chuck Dolly, because of the development that already existed along Chuck Dolly, and the fact that it was a much larger roadway, and section with the frontage roads and the four through lanes at the time. It was determined that larger developments, which already existed on Johnny Dodd, such as Walmart, those sorts of things, that was appropriate there, but not with what was trying to be developed on Coleman, which was a little bit smaller town, walkable community.
All right, thank you. Does anyone have a comment?
Just seeing, just taking the temperature of the committee of 10%?
Of open space?
Yeah. Like, what would that make a big difference? Is that...
Mr. Chapman?
My only comment is, we've already got design review requirements for plantings. So, and that sort of fits into the 8%.
That's where the 8% came from?
So, I would suggest the 8% is reasonable. But I'm one person, so.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. I'm going to go ahead. You're saying the 8% doesn't count towards the 8. I mean, the plantings don't count towards the 8. So, it sort of adds to the green space.
I think that's part of...
Where's that part of
the design review kind of thing?
Yeah.
And I'm going to offer, when we get to more of what the buildings look like, what a little more to that.
Okay.
So 50,000 square feet, do you have something in mind that's about that size? I'm trying to visualize if that's something we would even want on an example of something that size. A grocery store is usually 30,000?
50,000 square feet would allow most grocery stores, which at the time this was written, were just shy of, between 30 and 40,000 square feet, such as the Publix.
Right.
Now many of them are over that, but it would place a limitation on Coleman Boulevard for that footprint. Now, if they had a two- or three-story building, that would be 150,000 square feet of building total, but only 50 on the footprint. And the way these were developed is based on what the committee stated at the last meeting, the things they liked. We sort of extrapolated that throughout the entire code to say these sounded like the things that the committee wanted to keep, or the ideas of things you identified that you liked. So this is set up in a checklist system of you can go down and say keep this, get rid of that one, or apply it in any way, as Michelle said.
But this statement here, 50,000, that's the total building, not
no,
just the footprint.
That's the footprint.
Okay, so we need to say, rather than square feet, we need to say, do we need to say, it does say building footprint. Okay. I just, okay. I had in my mind that most grocery stores are around 35,000 or something, and I guess we wouldn't want anything bigger than that, like on Chuck Dolly or Ben Sawyer.
This would only limit Coleman.
Well, that's why I'm asking, do we want to include
the others?
Chuck Dolly, but we also
have, like you said, the Walmart. There's already existing structures that would then become sort of non-conforming structures, and those are bigger.
But that's not on Chuck Dolly or Ben Sawyer. That's on, like, Johnny Dodd. That's considered the Johnny Dodd's area, right?
Yeah, Walmart. We have Dick's, that area. So that's why, as Michael said, those larger stores existed. They were more appropriate along Johnny Dodd. So... that's why this was specific to Coleman.
Yeah.
So that's how it's written now. It's very specific to Coleman Boulevard. Do we want to carry it over and keep it the same?
That's what I'm saying. Do we want continuity with Chuck Dolly and Ben Sawyer, or do we only want this on Coleman? That's my question.
I just think if we're trying to keep some level of consistency for property owners, I think that keeping them incorporated where they're already part of the Boulevard Overlay District makes more sense to me. Mm-hmm. So keeping these building size limitations, it was already that way for Coleman Boulevard, so maintaining that is not an onerous burden on a property owner. But to add that to other roads, maybe a little too much.
Are we keeping the overlays on Ben Sawyer and...
There is no overlay on Ben Sawyer. No, we're not keeping any overlays if town council approves repealing it. These would just be design standards that we think are important, but we wanted to get your blessing on carrying them over. And this is how it applies now. So the 8% applies to anywhere within the Boulevard Overlay District. Building size limitation applies only to Coleman.
Okay.
And like I said, when we reword these, we can word them to, obviously, it's not, there's not going to be any reference to Boulevard Overlay District. It'll say, if you front Coleman Boulevard, you are required to do this, or what have you. So the language is going to change, the placement and the ordinance is going to change, but the actual design requirement would be the same, so.
Yeah, and especially on Coleman, there are at least two pretty good-sized shopping centers that hopefully, in the near future, will be redeveloped.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to allow the property owners to do what they could do today, but yet still do some things like what the facade looks like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, up next is the look like streets, not parking lot entrances.
Yeah, access points. We would like to keep this. We just wanted to make sure that it was okay.
Is that fine?
Yes.
That's fine. Entrances, so if you front a boulevard, you have to, your entrance has to look a certain way, like you're entering a street, not a parking lot. Okay. And then the encouraging shared vehicular access, we kind of thought that was a no-brainer, but we wanted to put it up here. And more importantly, really, was architectural review of residential. If you front a boulevard, we felt like that might be important to keep. But we wanted to get your blessing on that.
I want to talk about making whatever gets built look more like the Lowcountry as opposed to anywhere USA. And I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it. But I know you've got design review board approval of architectural. There are some things that I think the design review board could do more of to make it look more like maybe a smaller town. Maybe Lowcountry or whatever. But I would suspect that there's some architects on that design review board that could give us some ways to define that so that it is in the ordinance, so that when they, being the design review board, tell a developer or a builder, you know, you got to put awnings here that, you know, look nice. You've got to do some things with the structure fronting the street that looks like the Lowcountry. And unless it's in the ordinance, then the property owner, the developer, the builder can just go back and say, well, it's not in the ordinance. Mm-hmm. This is subjective. But I think we need to do more to make the buildings look more like the Lowcountry, whatever that is.
Ms. Hyatt? I guess that has to do with like design standards, and that it is something, I guess, separate from this that we could take a look at, or would that be part of this?
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily be part of this. We are, and that's our next agenda item, is on about the zoning code rewrite. And so we're going to be looking over all of our commercial design review standards. So if there are some things, we don't anticipate, there's a lot of good standards in there, and we're very happy with a lot of it. Not to say that there does need to be some changes. So that'll be something that we look at, as the overall zoning code rewrite. Do we need to beef something up? Do we need to change things? I think this, it's not necessarily part of this exercise, but it will certainly be a part of our zoning code rewrite.
All right, thank you very much. Reduced curb cuts, I think that sounds fine to me. Does that sound?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, reduced curb cuts, yes.
Good design.
I do have a question.
Ms. Hyatt.
How do we coordinate property owners? Like, we're encouraging them to share, so that's something. How has that worked out between neighbors? Is it in a right-of-way, so it doesn't involve them exactly?
Or? Sometimes it works. Sometimes we have to wait for the adjacent property to redevelop. But I'm trying to think of a good example we might have, Michael, where we have a good shared example of shared parking.
Um, Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A, yeah, yeah.
But there are plenty that aren't going to.
There are.
We can't get cooperation.
Yeah.
We can or can't, that's what I'm wondering.
You can't always get cooperation, you can't.
This is more an encouragement rather than.
Right, right.
You can with the Planning Commission, because when that stuff comes to them, you can make a very strong point that you have to do this, or we may not approve it.
Okay.
And we did it from time to time. There's some times we failed, and I can show you a couple of places on 17 that it didn't happen, but not for not trying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great idea. I just wondered how do you coordinate that and get property owners to share, you know,
it can be
the design.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But we can do it, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And then last was the terminal vistas.
Oh, sorry, one more back.
I'm sorry.
There was one more, the duplex and townhouse?
Yeah, just making sure that those are, if you front a boulevard, we would like to still get architectural review, whether it's staff level or DRB.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. And then last was the terminal vistas. We would like that those also get architectural review.
I think that sounds good as well. So,
okay.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
All right, moving on. Are we done with item number four? Any other thoughts from the committee?
Lily, thank you for pulling those out and trying to read our minds.
Number five is update on the status of the Town of Mount Pleasant's revised zoning code and land development regulations.
All right. So just a quick background. Our first zoning code was actually written in 79 and then it was recodified in 1981. Since that time, there has been no comprehensive update. Obviously, with the growth and everything, we have done minor amendments, we've done major amendments, we've tweaked it, and over the years, it's become, you know, fragmented and piecemeal changed. And we got to look, and I think the last couple of years, we've done over 100 amendments. And so you think about, we talk about the unintended consequences of changing something here without a comprehensive look at it, what it affects down the road or what it affects in another section of our zoning code. And so it is past time to do this. We adopted the comprehensive plan in 2020, which obviously sets a direction for our zoning code. White and Smith, and Kelly's going to present to you in just a minute. White and Smith did an audit in 2019, if you'll recall, and then they presented the Development Code's technical evaluation that was presented August of last year. And the audit itself was literally like 70 pages of how to fix our 500-page zoning code. And so based on the comp plan, based on all these changes, the fact that it has seen an overhaul, the existing codes are outdated. They don't promote the desired development patterns. And so what we end up doing is these things we're doing now where we do patchwork and we try to do quick fixes. And what we want to do is a comprehensive approach to this and make sure we get it right. And so here we are. We're going to look at chapters 155 and 156. So this code rewrite, it's predominantly for these two chapters, land development regulations and then our zoning code, but it does affect other chapters, and Kelly will talk about that a little bit. And with that, I will hand it over to her and let her tell you a little bit about what we'll be working on over the next year.
And you can work, Kelly. Good afternoon, Planning Committee members. I'm Kelly Cousineau with White and Smith Planning and Law Group. I'm happy to be here before you today to present our draft annotated outline for the revised zoning code and land development regulations. I just have a handful of slides. I'm happy to take questions as we go or at the end, however y'all would prefer to move forward. The annotated outline, in conjunction with the technical evaluation that Michelle mentioned, those serve as a blueprint for the drafting process. you can see here from this screenshot on the right side, the annotated outline itself is set up based on the proposed structure of the revised code. So you have the new section number and title on the in the left two columns, a description in the center, kind of what the plan is for that section. And then the fourth column is shows the existing zoning code section. So it sort of maps where the provisions in the current code are proposed to be relocated in the revised codes. The goal is to provide a more user-friendly structure than the current codes, which will make key information easier to find and hopefully easier to understand. The goal also is to provide a more logical structure for the codes, reflecting the town's approval processes, and you'll kind of see that on the next slide. I will note that typically when we do these sort of code projects, we use the annotated outline as a working document. So it will continue to evolve as we get into drafting. You know, once you start drafting, it might make sense to move things around or add new sections. So we'll continue to update this throughout the process. As Michelle mentioned, the revisions pertain only to the zoning code and the land development regulations. However, we are proposing to shift some of the chapters around in Title 15. This goes back to the notion of structuring this to reflect better reflect the development process. So, for example, the zoning code, instead of being the last chapter in this title, we're proposing for it to be first, since it really sets the foundation for everything else that comes afterwards. Then followed by the land development regulations. The flood, stormwater, and development impact fee ordinances would remain in their current chapters, and we'd move the building regulations to the end. And then we're also proposing a new chapter at the end for vested rights. So this would consolidate all of the vested rights provisions that are in the zoning code and the land development regulations into one place. Those are primarily dictated by state law, so they're the same in the zoning code and the land development regulations. So it just makes sense to consolidate them. In terms of the structure of the code itself, it generally follows the structure of the rest of the town code. There's chapters, subchapters, and sections. Due to the complexity of the zoning regulations and land development regulations, we do propose adding two new levels of organization, as well as actually numbering or lettering, I suppose, the subchapters. Right now, you'll see in the zoning code, for example, some of the sections have a big, bold heading. I think there's one before the buffer yard standards that says, vegetation requirements. So that's sort of a subchapter now, but it's not numbered. So we're proposing to number those and then add parts and subparts between the subchapter and the section levels. And again, this just helps with organization and being able to more quickly find information in the codes. Okay, so this slide lays out the proposed subchapters for the zoning code. It starts out with an executive summary, which is really just a general overview of what's in the zoning code, how to find the information you need, how to determine what regulations apply to a particular piece of property. Then it goes into what we think are typically the most often used sections of the code, so zoning district, use regulations, trees, parking, and then with the lesser used sections towards the back of the code, like in enforcement, legal provisions, those sort of things. We do also propose consolidating definitions and moving those to the back of the code, just because it's more typical to find a glossary at the back of a book. Also, the building permit allocation system, we're proposing putting this at the very end since the program does have a sunset date, and if and when the program ends, it'll make it easy to remove it from the code without having to renumber subsequent sections. Similar setup for the land development regulations, starting with an executive summary and then sort of the more generally used provisions such as general development standards, subdivision standards, and having the lesser used sections toward the back. There is kind of a reserved subchapter for appendices where it may be appropriate to put some, you know, technical design criteria or road cross sections or something like that. So we're reserving a spot at the end for those. And then finally, I just wanted to touch on next steps. We plan to get to drafting shortly, and we are starting with the zoning code. So we're just going to start at the beginning. You'll see draft revisions to the zoning districts and use regulations, and we'll get drafting underway in the new year. And that's all I have. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your work on this. So it seems like where we are so far, it's all organizational and structural. Those are the changes. There isn't really anything substantive that's been, other than our work already on the Shem Creek District. Is that correct?
Correct. There's been no drafting. There, in terms of the reorganization, it does begin to flesh out some of the changes that were recommended or proposed in the technical evaluation. But no, there haven't, aside from Shem Creek, there haven't been any substantive text changes.
Okay, that's thank right. you. Does anyone else have any thoughts or comments on this?
My only comment is, Kelly, does it help to have worked for the town of Mount Pleasant
on
this? We're glad to have you back.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's nice to have that background. It's definitely helpful.
All right. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes item number 5. Our final item on the agenda before adjourning is discussion and possible action related to amendments to the town's parking requirements.
The latest draft, if you turn to page 3, that's where you'll see the provisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This was before you last month and continued the discussion. Just for refresher purposes, the overall discussion item is related to charging businesses, charging for parking, required parking. So to be clear, we wanted to avoid areas that were not required. But that is for discussion among the committee. And then I had mentioned going several meetings back that our recommendation, of course, is that any legislative change be prospective rather than retrospective. And then really the third part of it is we had talked about the validation and whether the committee felt that that should be appropriate. This language is based on the discussion last month where you all considered validation but wanted to make sure that if you did permit that or wanted to see that move forward, that it was 100% covered as opposed to partially. So there are any number of ways you can go with this for discussion. As mentioned, this would need to go before our planning commission as it is a proposed change to our zoning code. So that would be the next step. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, committee. Do you have any questions on this?
I think
Ms. Corley?
I love the fact that it's prospective versus retrospective, and I love the validation process. I think I said that last time. So,
all right, thank you, Mr. Chapman.
I had an instance, and I'm not going to name the business, where 3 different phones were used to try to satisfy the validation parking requirement. All 3 phones were not able to receive the appropriate validation, and it ended up that the young lady at the seating stand just wiped them all off. How do we keep from having that issue continue?
Yes, sir. I think I'll go back to the beginning. I think that the threshold issue that you all wanted to consider was to read it, whether even to allow validation as an option to begin with. So we'll start there. Assuming it is, that is an enforcement mechanism, Mr. Chapman. I'm not sure of any which way we can't keep up with technology in an ordinance. We can't keep up with how it's being done. Of course, we could write a series of regulations as to how validation should be permitted. That's a separate exercise, and we can take that on. But it would be very difficult to keep up with that. And so the answer is, if validation is not, as a practical matter, occurring, then it is a violation of the ordinance, at least that is, as it is written here.
So that would be something for individuals to report to the town, that this is a violation of the ordinance?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is the penalty for that?
Well, we could tie it to our general offenses penalty, and that's a $500 fine. Maximum $500 fine.
Maximum, yes.
Yes, ma'am.
So what you're saying is, if the validation program that the business is using,
right,
is not working for all customers, that it would be, based on what you've written, a violation punishable by up to $500.
I would say each instance would be a potential
violation. So for three separate phones.
Yes, sir.
It would be three separate violations.
Yes, sir.
Or one car. Because it was only one car, or was it all three cars?
Three cars,
wow.
Depends on the factual, but right, per spot, apparently. But per attempt to charge for parking, I guess, is the way that I would put it.
So I know this doesn't address Ms. Hyatt's concern that people will then just, who can afford it, will then just say, well, I'll just go pay the $20 parking fee at Water's Edge, and I will go kayaking for the day. Well, and I'll take up one of their customers' parking spots for 5 hours. Is that one of your concerns, Ms. Hyatt?
Yeah, I don't see how this solves our problem.
But I don't see that.
It just says that they can't charge their customers for parking, but it's not saying they're required to provide the parking spaces.
Well, parking is required as a general function of our zoning code.
Right. So, yeah.
So I hear what you're saying. There are a few ways in which a business can meet parking requirements, and that's just by zoning ratio, shared parking agreements, and the like.
Can we require that they put up signage that documents their customers' spaces? Or, I mean, how can we enforce them providing the spaces for their clients? That's to me the bottom line of what the problem is. They're not providing parking for their customers when they're letting other people park there.
Ma'am.
So
I mean,
how do we?
That I'm not trying to be, but that is the functional challenge with this, is how we go about doing that. And it is possible to require designation, or at least submit a plan to the town to say, these are our spaces, and then here's what we're required, everything else is not. And then, of course, like so many things that we deal with, becomes an enforcement issue rather than a legislative issue. And that is the challenge. That is the primary challenge. I would say the secondary challenge, of course, is some of the areas, at least, and as I mentioned this last month and probably the month before, that we're talking about, they're challenged to begin with based on a history of let's just say confused, and not exactly precise methodology would be the best way I put it. But
I have a question on this last sentence. Businesses may verify customer parking by providing 100% parking validation. Wouldn't it more, businesses shall provide 100% parking validation to customers? So, I mean, was there a reason that the language wasn't just more simplified?
Well, we can write it any way, yes, but what I think we're accounting for is that if they elect to utilize validation, then they would have to reimburse or allow it at the 100% rate.
But I thought that we were requiring that they offer this validation, that you cannot charge a parking fee, and if you do, you must 100% validate to your customers.
Yes, ma'am. I think that's what it says, but obviously, if you are reading it differently, it signals to me that it is not clear, and we will write it more clearly.
Okay. That would be helpful, because this whole businesses may verify customer parking by providing 100% validation seems to be, make it like an optional
Understand.
Thing. All right, does anyone else have any thoughts or comments on this, Ms. Hyatt?
I'm still trying to figure out, what's the incentive for them to provide parking? I mean, if they're going to profit from people that aren't using their business by charging for parking, then there's no incentive for them to provide free parking. I still don't see how this fixes it and what, how we can.
And the analysis.
You know what I'm saying? This is almost an incentive not to provide parking because you can't charge your clients, but you can charge people that are going kayaking. So let the kayakers come on, you know, so you're not, I don't know how.
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying, because what we're trying to convey is that the required parking area, whatever the number of spaces are, and you had already mentioned a designation requirement, how that could happen, none of those, let's see if I understand what you're saying, none of those really are charged, that they must be not charged. And those designated spaces, however they're calculated, and that's the difficult part, cannot be charged. So I'm not really sure. We're not getting the difficulty to me is identifying the spaces that are required. And once we do that, then it's a lot easier to enforce. Outside of that, I think you're right. It becomes a who knows what space is what.
Right. Or is Ms. Hyatt, is your concern the second sentence? Like if it was just the first sentences, businesses falling under the commercial use category shall not charge customers a parking fee for utilization of parking spaces, and eliminate sentence number two. So on a prospective basis, that you cannot charge for parking. Is that, and that would apply on a prospective basis, not to the business, not to the businesses that already have it.
That is the recommendation, yes, ma'am. I think that could certainly be further discussed here and at Planning Commission, but there are many reasons for that recommendation, as we've discussed before. But again, if the validation part becomes too onerous or difficult, as I said, the other option is really not even to
not to allow
that moving forward, right?
Ms. Hyatt, would you be more comfortable with zero charge and eliminate the validation sentence?
I feel that way for their required spaces.
Right.
Like if they have more spaces than required, they could charge for those. But if they have are required to have 10 spaces, then those should be 10 should be free. Because this is basically outlining what they're already doing. They have the spaces, they're letting anybody park there, and then they're validating for customers, but they're letting, if you didn't come in, you just don't get validated. So this kind of just describes what's already going on and doesn't really... I mean, we're forcing them to do it. Right now, they're voluntarily
doing it. They're voluntarily. That's
so this basically, to me, is forcing them to do what they're already doing, which is still not exactly what we want them to do, because it doesn't really provide the spaces when you let anybody park there. This is just requiring that they do the validation process.
Ms. Corley?
I don't...
Yeah, and I'm just
how to fix it.
One of four, but I think that we're creating... we're putting a huge burden on those business owners, because through the validation process, it keeps them from having to have a parking attendant figuring out who's parking where. If not, at least here they can get some financial reward for whoever's parking there, because I'm sure they'd rather that person come in and eat instead of just charging them $20 to park. They'd rather them spend $100 on dinner. So I just think that's just a too big of a burden to put on.
If I could respond to that.
Business.
Right now, it's not that you pay $20. It's that you get a $40 parking ticket, and you get a $60 fee to have the boot removed from your car. That's what's on the sign.
But who's enforcing that?
Their private contractor who is driving through the parking lot.
But how do they know if that's me sitting there, if I'm eating or if I'm just parked? The restaurant's going to have to come out and see.
The restaurant has to validate with a number on the bill you pay. There's a validation number that you put into the...
the parking meter.
No, not in the parking meter.
The app.
Into the app.
App.
You put that in, because before you start, you put your license number and the type of car you have.
I just think that that's just my opinion. I just think that's too burdensome on the business. But I get what you guys were saying. I just don't agree.
Well, go ahead, Ms. Hyatt.
I would just say they've only recently started doing this. Mm-hmm. So I don't really feel like it's a burden. We're kind of asking them to go back to what they used to do and stop. This is kind of a for-profit operation that somebody has brought to them that they thought was a good idea, you know, but rather than it being a burden. I mean, to me, it's more of a burden to do this than to just have signs up that say they're putting their best effort up, signs up that say parking for our business only.
But don't you think a business wants that business to come in? They don't want that parking lot. They don't want that parking space to just,
I don't know.
Have one part, one car.
Right, ma'am. And I think as we've discussed in the past, I think the question, while we certainly are predictors of the market, I think we can look mostly townwide, and this is not, far from me to say, but at least we don't see it as a universal or pending problem that suddenly Publix is going to start raising the gate. Mm-hmm. However, I do think there are areas of concern, as I've been identified by staff in this committee. Again, I will say that the particular areas of concern, we really have an issue structurally. A lot of this has just evolved. And whereas when you come in now, part of your requirements are that you meet our strict parking requirements, part of which maybe you have a shared parking arrangement. What we cannot say is that years going back in some of the older locations that is to the letter of the law. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest to you that the one or two areas that are of primary concern really do need to be considered and reviewed again in light of what has actually happened versus what is supposed to be happening. But again, to compound all of that, our council and our town has passed some ordinances essentially allowing legal nonconformities or nonconforming situations to move forward, and parking is one aspect of those. So it does need to be looked at in that light. To get to the paid portion, my opinion, it really just seems if there's a blanket do not charge for your required parking spaces, it is a lot more simple mechanism for us to legislate and enforce. Mm-hmm. But what we want to make sure of is that if this committee and ultimately council believes that there should be a validation, that it is 100% on the businesses to manage it themselves, and that if they fail to do so, then they're subject to fines and penalties. Which would include, I would think, and this may be fleshed out at Planning Commission, that there has to be some designation requirement as to what those spaces are and what they're required. But as businesses come in or are built, you know, that is part of our process where it wasn't 25 years ago. So
I think at this point in time, do I have a motion to recommend this to Planning Commission? And would you want to recommend it as written as C, or C just the first sentence? Do I have anyone wanting to make a motion? No. Because I think if it was just the first sentence, that would solve Ms. Corley's issue of it being difficult to regulate a burden on the business. And then it would just be on a prospective basis. Don't charge for parking for your required spaces. It would be very simple.
Yes. My other concern is that it keeps that business from recouping at least. Just how do you keep people from not parking in those spots?
Well, I think that they do have a private contracting company that will come check, and if someone's been there for 4 or 5 hours, they'll boot them and take them out and tow them.
Yeah.
That's how it works in any sort of parking structure.
Sure. Where in my neighborhood there's a tennis center, and every year during the tennis tournament, right, everyone park. I keep saying Publix because apparently that's the extent of my shopping abilities. But everyone parks there and goes over to the tennis center, and that's what they do. I mean, that's an extreme circumstance, but I think our businesses have always been faced with people utilizing parking for businesses other than their own. So we can do our best to restrict that, but I'm not sure this is going to get us there. I'm not sure what gets us there other than self-policing by the businesses.
Ms. Hyatt, go ahead.
I guess I was going to make a motion.
Make a motion of just the first sentence.
Yeah, but I was trying to see if I wanted to add anything else. To customers utilizing property. Okay. I did have one more question before I made the motion. Did we say before that charging for parking is sort of running a business, or it's generating revenue that we don't have how is that taxed? Or
right, if it is,
I think should they have to have a business permit to charge for parking? And yes, you know,
you have to have zoning, yeah, uh-huh, to be zoned for it, and you have to have a business license if you are a charge parking operation.
So okay, so then that goes back to how have we been allowing people to charge for parking if they don't have a business license to do that? I mean, if they were a parking garage, they would.
It's been mixed. We have discovered some who were paying, aren't paying. Some are different entities altogether than, say, the restaurant that they're affecting. Is that about right, Marcy?
Yes.
So I guess there'd be a way to move this, that could be for further discussion, that we should.
We'll send out letters to the businesses that are running paid parking and make sure that they're compliant with the town ordinances.
I mean,
and that's something staff can do, right?
And we should be doing that, and we will.
Okay.
Yes.
So we don't need to discuss that further.
So we don't need to.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Right. This legislation, that is already covered in our zoning and business license legislation.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'll move to send this to Planning Commission with just including the first sentence in C.
All right, so on a prospective basis, they shall not charge for parking.
Right.
All right, do I have a second to the motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I'm only going to, I'll vote for the motion. But there's got to be some way that the method of parking validation is universally available to all parties.
But there would be no parking validation because they wouldn't be able to charge in the future.
I know that.
My motion eliminates that for now, you know.
What's that?
This motion eliminates the parking validation thing for now.
I hear you. Go ahead.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion. Any opposed? All right, motion carries.
Committee, this will come back to you, obviously, yes, after the Planning Commission meeting. This will come back to you for further refinement.
Maybe they'll have some brilliant ideas to share with us. All right, if there's nothing more to come before us, we stand adjourned.